In 2018, before the gallery, art shows, and projects, we had a chance to travel and sit with artists and talk about their journey, practice, and more. Here we speak with Omari Booker, a visual artist based out of Los Angeles, California, and Nashville, Tennessee. On the historic Haley Farm, Omari and I took time away from the Children's Defense Fund Conference and talked art, culture, and his past. Thank you for checking out Smoozing with Artists, Legacy Footage.
First question, what does art mean to you? And within that, what message do you want to send with your art? And what issue in society are you most passionate about?
I think art for me is liberation. I mean, that's the space where I find freedom. And that's what it means to me. That's the, I think when you kind of strip down all the other stuff, whether it's technical or how well you draw or paint or whatever, it's a space where you can truly be yourself, whether it's a hip hop artist rapping or someone playing the guitar or someone singing, someone on any stage performing. And for me, a visual artist, you know, in that studio, I can be exactly who I am and I can say exactly what I want to say. And that is, unfortunately, that's not the liberation that I've always been afforded walking around the world. I've felt like I've kind of had a censored existence, 6'9" black man in the South, you know, so I've often felt like I can't really be as free as I would like, but in that space, I definitely can.
What message do you want to send with your art?
I think I'd like to send the message that in spite of the realities and the pain and the struggle of the world, there's still beauty. And I mean, a lot of the artwork that I have is difficult to deal with, but I mean, there's a lot of beauty in that struggle. There's a lot of beauty in that pain. And that's, I think without being able to kind of get in touch with that, we can live sort of a fantasy world. And, you know, it's like we tend to want to look away from the homeless or the incarcerated or the abused or, you know, someone from a sexual orientation that's different, whatever the thing is that we might kind of want to not fully bring into our world. Like, that is the thing that makes us human, that's Talib Kweli, the beautiful struggle, you know? I mean, that's it. The things that sometimes have the most, bring the most difficulty, also bring the most joy and passion. That's kind of what I want people to see. I want to communicate that, yes, it's tough to look at. It's supposed to be tough to look at. So help change it, but don't stop looking at it. And that's the thing with a piece of artwork. It's there forever. It's going to outlive me. And at some point, here in somebody's garage, somebody's got to deal with it, you know? So yeah.
What issue in society are you most passionate about?
I think mass incarceration is what, because it's touched me personally, and I had a drug sentence, a 15-year drug possession sentence. And so I think just the reality of how easily it is to be in the system and how hard it is to get out, and also how it plagues black men, black families, it's something that touches me really closely. But really in that, I think it bleeds out to any part of society that's really disenfranchised. I think
the whole mass incarceration piece is the piece that after I went through it, I couldn't look away. It's like, you know, it's not like they call your number, you get out, and you're like, forget the other 500,000 people that are, you know. So there was definitely a tie to that I don't think I would have necessarily had I not been through it and not seen how, you know, went to good schools from a pretty good background, et cetera. And even when I went before the judge, I wasn't offered the grace that some of my peers were. And when you see that played out, and especially played out because of race, it was something I couldn't look away from.
Can you remember the moment when you realized there were issues and injustice in the world?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think the moment I realized that I was in pre-first grade, I got in a fight with this kid. I guess I shouldn't name his full name, but I got in a fight with this kid. And he threw the soccer ball in my head, hit me in the head. So I kicked him in the face. I bloodied his nose. I mean, because it was like, dude, kick me, you know? Yeah, that's what you do. You're in pre-first grade. I was probably 5, 6, something like that. Anyway, I got in a lot of trouble. The kid didn't get in any trouble. They called my mom in, and I think the next day, I didn't get in trouble with my mom in that instance, just because she knew, like, she knew it was a predominantly white school, and I was already being treated differently, just because of those sort of preconceived notions. But I was walking to the car the next day. I got in the car, and my mom asked, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "I'm just not as good as those white boys." Never went back to the school. Pulled me out that day. And so, so grateful for a mother who was like, "Oh, fuck that. You know, you are as good, better, and not even better. But if you're a black kid in the United States, somebody better be telling you you're better. Or there's no chance." So that was the first time that I kind of realized, like, yeah, man, they're not playing fair, even in pre-first grade.
What does activism look like to you? And within that, how is social justice to be achieved?
I think activism, to me, and I do arts and activism work. I've never really considered myself an activist. I've considered myself honest. And to me, it's like, if you look around society and you see something that is unfair, you act on it. It's like, I got a neighbor and I see somebody stealing their paper every morning. So, hey, you're not going to steal that paper again. Like, that's it. You know, that's, you're not going to steal it. So I think it's taking some kind of action, and everybody has a different role. That's the beautiful thing about this whole experience is I can't do the things that, you know, the Damien Durr and Dr. Brandon, you know, McCormick, like some of the renowned preachers and like, though they're, we all kind of have a part to play in this that makes us activists. But I mean, but we're really just all honestly looking at society and saying, it's fucked up. It's always been fucked up. It's never been fair. It's always been unjust. So we're taking some sort of action to correct that. But it looks different for everybody. And I think if everyone's doing something, that's all you can ask. And that's any race. That's black, white, whatever you, whatever background you're coming from, find something that you can do. You know, there's a kid in some school that had that experience of, you know, protected themselves and was treated in a certain way. There's something that everyone can do. So
how is social justice achieved?
I don't have a lot of, I'm not optimistic for justice in the United States. I don't think that the lineage, the history, the power structure, I don't think that it's going to allow true justice. I think we'll keep on struggling. And, you know, because Harriet struggled, and my mom struggled, and my grandmother struggled, I'm going to struggle. I'm not struggling with any preconceived notion or any dreamlike things of, I'm going to walk into a space and be treated the same way as a white person. But that ain't what it's about. You know, you, I mean, you do it anyway. And I think we achieve it. I mean, it is ridiculous what black people have done in the United States, given where we could have been, should have been, I mean, against all odds. And so that's really what the struggle's for. It's not a, yeah, I mean, it's never been just. It's not going to be just. I think the country will fall before it's just.
Yeah. So how do social issues influence your expression?
I think, you know, I think artists and yourself as an artist, we document. So I mean, we kind of take a look at what's around and try to really get to the heart of it. And, you know, and I think that's what, you know, I think that is what social justice does, kind of bleed into artwork. I mean, when I paint kids that are behind prison bars, I mean, I'm really seeing these kids behind prison bars because it's like, I was at Hadley Park when I was 7, you know? So, and nobody would have thought, you know, I mean, my dad's a lawyer. Mom's a professional. I mean, both parents have graduate degrees. I got a 15, and the max on my charge was 60. Cocaine possession, 60 years. For somebody who, the last time I hit somebody was in grade school. Never carried a weapon even. I think when you kind of look at the system and you try to accurately depict the world around you, the world in general, then social justice is going to bleed into your work. I mean, that's just, if you're looking at it. And I think a lot of the people that I grew up with, some looked away because it was to protect themselves. It was like, James Baldwin said it. He's like, to be a conscious black, black American, a conscious Negro, you're infuriated all the time. And people don't want to walk around fist up all the time. I mean, we want to kick it too. You know, we want to have an all right day sometimes. But, and I think there's some that spend a lot of time looking away from the issues because it's difficult to look at. And then there's also, I mean, I think part of the invention of whiteness is the invention of blinders. Oh man, it's ice cream. It's cotton candy. It's football. It's American. It's baseball. You know about it, yeah? It's not that bad. I mean, and that's part of whiteness. And black people are just as affected by whiteness. Because they're like, oh, it's Mercedes. It's, you know, it's Nike. And I'm not saying, hey, I wear Nike. Hey, I rock some A's, man. I've got the J. I've got a couple. My mom wouldn't buy them. But believe when I hit 30 and I could afford a couple of A's, and I had some J's. So, but yeah, the being prone to kind of look away is something that I think once you've seen it, you don't have that. You can't unsee what you're seeing. And I think that's why a lot of artists, and especially African-American artists, they have to deal with it. Because as an artist, you're going to be honest. And once you're honest and you see it, you gotta kick it back. You gotta put it back out. And I know some great white artists that paint beautiful landscapes and beautiful abstracts and beautiful, et cetera. And not to say that their work isn't meaningful, but they don't have the experience to draw from to kick back out the same reality because they don't have that reality. Like it is literally a different existence as a white American. It just is, you know? Yeah.
Do you have a memorable story of how your art has impacted a movement or a person?
It's honestly probably the most memorable story is probably how it impacted me. You know, I mean, yeah, and that's definitely not like in an ego sense. That's just in a true grace. You know, feeling like this thing kind of showed up in my life at a time when I really needed it. And I created a lot of artwork while I was incarcerated, but probably a year and a half after I got out, I was painting this piece called Peaches. It's a portrait of Harriet Tubman, and there's a Talib Kweli song called Four Women, or Expansion Outro is the actual name of the song, but Four Women is the Nina Simone song that he remade, and there is a verse that talks about a woman from Georgia called Peaches. And so I kind of really loosely created the piece, and, you know, was just kind of in that spiritual moment where it felt kind of like an out-of-body experience. And I stepped back and like felt like she was in the room with me. Just one of those goosebumps. Started crying. I even went to take a picture of the piece, and my camera was actually like flipped to selfie, so I could like see myself crying and snapped a picture of me crying and painted that. And actually, Janet Wolf, someone who's here at the farm, is the person that bought the piece of that I painted up myself, the self-portrait. But yeah, I think that was one of those moments where it was like, yeah, this is ancestral. This is so much bigger than anything that I can do. And I'm grateful to be the vessel, and I would like to try to do that as often as possible. But yeah, that was one of those moments where it's like, man, you get that feeling one time, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's like the game-winning shot moment where it's like, man, you know, this is why those 40-year-olds are still in the NBA trying to chase some hoop dreams. It's like, man, you feel it once, and you gotta, you know, you've gotta follow that. So.